Well, I guess I see why they call this the Red Planet. It is quite red here.
Hello, you must be new here. Welcome to Mars.
Robot?
That's kind of rude. My name is Opportunity. My friends call me Oppie.
My apologies. I forgot my manners. It is a pleasure to meet you, Opportunity.
Party of one? Or do you have friends around here somewhere?
The word friends is. Regardless, the others who came with me left me behind. It's just me.
In that case, settle in. We should show you the sights. Do you want to see the ice caps or the Olympus Mons? Or I guess that's it. It's like they say, nothing ever happens on Mars.
How long have you been here, Opportunity?
Me? Oh, six, no, 17 years now.
That's quite a span. What have you been busying yourself with?
You want a seat? I never get to show anyone. This is exciting.
I would be delighted to see.
Wow, that's great. All right, follow me.
It has all been built for this moment. 3 seasons of The Genius, 1 season of Crime Scene. I have run 4 games of the Garnet Wager for Alan, Six, and late joiner Nick. Now it's time to watch the last season of The Genius and play another season of games. And this one is for all the Garnets. Welcome back. This is the Garnet Wager. Begin.
Hello, friends and folks, and welcome back to another episode of The Garnet Wager. We're back once again to talk about The Genius. I'm Six Devmer from Scanlan Media. I'm joined, as ever, by my stalwart co-host, Alan.
Hello, hello, hello. I'm back. I'm back and ready to go.
And, of course, the man of the hour, the deadly power, our current points leader, Nicholas J.W. Cease.
I'm gonna be straight with you.
That was so
That
fucking
deathmatch was
loud.
fucked up.
Yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there someday.
We'll get there.
It's been a while, folks. Should we address the time off?
It's been a while.
God damn
Every
it.
time, motherfucker.
Every
Since
time.
I saved, hold my hand high.
The week that we were going to record, Six had a medical appointment. After that, we just got delayed by being all busy for various reasons. It's okay.
Yeah.
We're here. We're happy to be back on track. Hopefully, we'll get back to a normal schedule soon. We're watching The Genius. Let's get it. It's episode 8, Minus Auction 2. It's the sequel to Minus Auction. Nick, do you know about a Minus Auction?
I don't know about Minus Auction, but I would like to know about Minus Auction 1, the original, the prequel.
Well, in that case, it's time for our favorite segment, the improvised recap, where I take 30 seconds to attempt to tell you the rules of the game.
Nova could use a snack.
Nova could use a
I didn't know
snack.
what was going to come out. It's been so long since I used the soundboard.
And literally without looking at anything, I'm going to attempt to tell you how to play Minus Auction 2 in 3, 2, 1. In Minus Auction 2, everybody is trying to get the lowest negative numbers on their cubes. You have to bet on cubes using chips. When you buy chips out of the thing, that's how much it costs. You can reject it, but if you keep rejecting, you eventually have to spend garnets. There are also now in Minus Auction 2, 2 hidden cubes, and those aren't revealed except to one person, who can lie if they choose to. And at the end of the day, you're trying to get consecutive cubes that are a low value, and that's how you, and the person with the lowest value wins. Right
Okay,
on the
so
fucking dot.
You did you did okay, so first of all, you did contradict yourself where you said the goal was to get the lowest number and then you said the goal was to get the highest number. The correct one was highest. And then also
The correct answer is you're trying to get the lowest absolute value
Yeah, that's
numbers.
right, that's what it was.
Sure.
Highest negative number.
I died sure.
Okay.
Wait.
Sure. The closest you can to zero.
That's what it was.
Smallest
There you go.
negative
Closest to
number. How
zero.
about that?
And then also, the two cubes that are taken out, only one of them you get to see. One of them is just a mystery to everyone.
Yes. And that led to, like, post-credits comedy, almost.
It's kind of fucked up.
It is fucked up. So that, Nick, that mechanic is different, that, like, hidden cubes mechanic.
Oh, okay.
Minus Auction was a game they played in Season 2, I'm pretty sure. I'm not a huge fan of Minus Auction. I think I do like the physicality of it, like whole throwing the chips into the little, the like, Chuck E. Cheese spinning toy thing, where you put a coin in it and it spins around and, like, does, like, a whirlpool. I liked that, and I liked some of the team making that happens here, but ultimately not my favorite main match. What did we think?
What doesn't do it for you? Is there anything specific, or just...
There isn't enough deliberating. All the best genius moments happen between the gameplay, and this is like 90% gameplay, 10% talking. I think the ratio is off for me.
I think I agree with Alan here. I think there was a lot of just like of. I feel like the game was kind of defined by people being like, how greedy can I be? And people being like, hey, stop being greedy. And we just got that scene over and over.
Yeah, pretty much.
It felt a lot like a poker or like a mahjong hand.
Mm-hmm. You just said mahjong,
like,
on the brain.
Oh, that's true. Very true. But it was like, oh, I'm waiting for my number to come up. And then when my number comes up, because you basically want to get consecutive numbers. Because it usually will lower your total score.
Early on, yes, exactly. Early on, it's just I will take whatever numbers seem low absolute value. And then it's, I believe it's Hyunmin who comes up with the strategy of getting the second highest number so that he can do a sequence and then like have his numbers cancel out really easily.
And just milk people, yeah.
But once once everybody has their cubes, then it's like, okay, now I'm just trying to get my sequence. That's all I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, since the original one didn't have the missing cubes, that's sort of the thing that you know, curiosity, what's inside the cube, that's kind of the thing that throws this whole game off, is sort of like, you're gambling on, okay, I'm going to get these consecutive, like, strings that cancel themselves out, except for what if the exact cube I need just isn't in the game.
Right.
Yeah.
It could literally not be, because it's between 1 and 35, I think, but they don't have all of those numbers. It's just, like, a random smattering of numbers between there. I usually take notes on the intro. There wasn't much in this one. There was a fun high five, and Dongmin asked Kyunghoon if you're the guy who's supposed to be really good at death matches. I enjoyed
Kyunghoon. That. Kyunghoon came in as like ascendant Kyunghoon this episode.
He's starting to feel himself.
It was like a wax bust.
Yes.
He had the super styled hair. He was super shiny. He had a crisp shirt. And he came in and he smelled the air and said, ah, it's a great day to be Kyunghoon. And just paraded around like a king.
The episode where he gets eliminated is going to be the best episode of the season.
He's setting himself up for a fall.
One when he wins?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. He's not going to win. Mm-hmm.
I mean, he starts and saying, hey, guys, remember I said I would go to the death match and you guys said you'd give me garnets, so give me garnets. And then he has like... 2 times more garnets than anybody else to begin
and
with.
And then he spends the main match just spending all of them for nothing.
Garnets.
Not for nothing. That was his entire strategy.
Yeah, his strategy was, like, what did it get him, Nicholas? He didn't lose.
It got him to the next episode.
Yeah. He could have gotten to the next episode with a very different, less expensive strategy. Yes.
Do you have any idea how many garnets everybody has? I think the
answer
is no,
me to pull up the spreadsheet? The answer is, I have a vague idea.
Kyunghoon started this episode with, I believe, 20 garnets. He starts the episode with 20 garnets. And
I could not tell you any range in which he might have.
I think he overall lost 1 garnet for the episode.
That's
he gained so many, and he spent all of them.
Mm-hmm. This is correct.
Oh my God.
Yeah, his play in the back end was like, I'll bargain with people to get garnets back, which is like, okay, if that works for you, then great. And it did mostly work for him, but he didn't end up winning the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. And also, he didn't get that many back. He sort of offset his costs a little bit.
Yeah, he didn't fully break even.
He would talk to people, and they'd be like, "What if I gave you 1 garnet to offset the fact that you've given me 2 just now?"
Yeah,
it's like that's not like a big winning exchange there, bud.
I'm in an econ class, guys. That's an opportunity cost of, let me check, 1 garnet.
Math.
I think y'all are underestimating how great his strategy was.
He
didn't have to do much.
I mean, like, okay, listen.
He played his strength. And then if he only lost a garnet, that's incredible to me.
I am in a genius org right now, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that there is the, like, okay, I am going to sacrifice resources in order to not pay attention to this main match.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you could say that was his strategy, right? If his strategy was, I really just, things have been weird between me and my girlfriend and I want to spend the episode thinking about that instead of playing the motherfucking game, then yes, great job, Kyung-hoon.
He was playing, what he got through, he didn't go to a death match and he lost one garnet. Mm-hmm.
So, okay, what happened today was he lost resources and gained nothing.
Right.
That's what about not, everybody else?
They gained resources, Nicholas. Everyone else made a profit.
Jun-suk, zero.
Okay, Jun-suk's...
five, and then we get five, five, and four. My man still got, like, five garnets on most people. He's in a great spot.
It is especially funny that the episode starts with, like, Dongmin also saying, after the intro, being like, oh, our Kyung-hoon here has changed. And it's like, it's supposed to reference the fact that he's leading in garnets and, like, he's really cocky and cool now. But, like, his play is not big brain. He's just arrogant.
What? He played every single person. That's the reason he only lost one, because he was like, oh, guys, I don't know. I really can't pass this time.
Nicholas, he played every single person in Candyland. Yes, he did play a game with them. He didn't impress anyone. Apparently, he impressed you because you're too busy thinking about fucking satellites.
He does not need to impress anybody.
Okay,
as Hyunmin asked him, you know, what's your goal to win the genius?
Okay, Nick, let me ask you a question. Mm-hmm. Six people go to the grocery store.
Yeah.
Three of them go home with more money than they came there with. One person breaks even. One person loses money. The person who lost money did the worst, you idiot.
Lost money.
He lost a garnet, which is literally money.
He lost a dollar on the ground so that he could easily walk through. He, like, went to the grocery store, picked up his groceries.
He didn't get any groceries. He didn't get anything.
Okay, he just went to the grocery store. And then,
he paid a dollar for the privilege.
Yeah, because he's getting ready to go to fucking Gordon Ramsay's, like, Michelin star steakhouse.
Maybe
he doesn't care about your groceries.
Like, okay,
groceries have no power here.
I will accept that maybe next episode he's going to do some sick shit. It doesn't change the fact that today he just fucking showed up.
Well, he does literally say...
He manipulated everybody to get them garnets to pay. Everybody else paid for him to pass on the auction.
He gave them more overall than they gave him, Nicholas.
This is the most crosstalk we've ever had in a Genius episode, by the way. I'm like sweating. Editor 6 is like... he does say after Dongmin is like, our Kyung-hoon has really changed. He says basically, I live for the finals. I'm only here to progress, which he does.
Yeah.
So in that way, sure. I understand what Nick is saying. But he took, like, again, going back to the econ thing, he took way more losses than he probably needed to just to survive. He did not win a token of immunity.
He didn't even want to win, though. We'll get to that. He didn't care about winning.
Well, he said, okay, let me put it this way. If you're such a fucking, if you're, like, praying at the fucking shrine of Kyung-hoon over here, Nicholas, at the end of the episode, he's like, I did a bad job. That's what he fucking says.
Yeah.
What? No.
He does.
He's like, you know, I couldn't win today, but if I've learned anything from Songmin, it's that sometimes it's about your team.
He says, I think I messed up. I think I played wrong. He says he did do a good job.
Yeah.
You won't even listen to him. You're just so in your own world. You're so dementedly obsessed
intent.
With the myth of Kyung-hoon that...
He extorts Dongmin for garnets at one point.
He extorts everybody for garnets.
He's just an extortionist.
Yeah, and then he gives those back to
Gun. That was a fake extortion.
True.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the episode and not just the fact that
Nicholas, a fucking literal rocket scientist, doesn't know what numbers are. Let's talk about the fucking episode.
I like pretty colors.
Jun-suk and Dongmin have formed an alliance. Their plan is to own a wide swath of cubes so that they basically can have a monopoly on a corner of the game. This play doesn't go flawlessly because I still think Jun-suk can never be trusted. And Dongmin ends this episode by being like, I guess I'm on my own. I guess everyone left sucks. Or not that everyone else sucks, but like there's no more need for it. Like with five people left, alliances are not going to help me anymore.
Mm-hmm. Even though I mean, I will say, Kyung-hoon, I think I do stand by my choice. Kyung-hoon does say I probably shouldn't have done that, but he does kind of throw the game to protect Dongmin.
Kyung-hoon does?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He has the opportunity to go for a joint win with Jun Se-uk, and he throws it away mm-hmm. because he's made some deals with Dongmin, and he wants to keep Dongmin safe.
He's got to protect his dog.
That was
keep the doghouse strong.
Dogmin.
That was Dogmin. Oh my god. That was a very funny part where they're like, the announcer explains in depth how they can get a joint win, and it's like all they have to do is both do this, and then cut to Kyung-hoon's like, I am not doing it, and you just see Jun Se-uk being like, the fuck? What?
You bastard.
What did we? Yeah, he says you bastard. Like, what did we just say? This is as close to actual, like, interpersonal drama as we ever get on The Genius. It's him being like, wow, bastard. All right. Anyways, I guess we're going back to
I think it's because Jun Se-uk isn't to be trusted, like Six said.
Yeah.
Actually, Alan said that, but, you know.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, no, he definitely can't be trusted. You know who can be trusted is my boy Hyunmin, who's just sitting in the top of playing like, I want a minus 35 and minus 34, and I'm just going to stay up here and win. At one point, to ensure everybody else that he won't be greedy, the cutest thing he's ever done, he draws a heart on his pad of paper. He wastes the whole sheet, and then the editor like highlights it in pink, and he's like, guys, I'm not going to fuck anyone over, and he doesn't.
He's like, please don't destroy me. Please don't destroy me.
I've done nothing wrong. I love him, and yet, if I had to pick one player to be on my team, which I know I will, it would not be him. He's going to get screwed over by that kindness.
Oh, yeah. He's going to die.
Yeah. Well, actually. Oh, you didn't know that, Nick, by the way? The last two episodes are just a death
match. Oh, they're literal death matches.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Jenny's Chow.
Everyone loves it when we do that. That's their favorite bit.
Jenny's Chow. I like how everybody just wants to rob Kyung-hoon of his garnets, though. They keep talking about how they want to take his, but then he just has like a bunch of the garnets after all the exchanges, and the game calls him the Garnet Broker, which I wish was one of our side characters. Yeah.
Yeah.
But what I actually...
And then he goes Garnet Broke.
So what I do like about Minus Auction is that it's all about, it's basically a game of leverage. Like, how much leverage do you have over everyone else? Be it your cube values, how many garnets you have, or in the case of Kyung-hoon and the mysterious hidden cube, it's who you choose to lie to. And when you don't have leverage, you are, as Dongmin says, just a bunch of bums. He's like, we're actually all bums. None of us are winning. None of us have a lot of chips yet. We're all bums here. Which I just thought was really fun.
Mm-hmm.
Kyung-ran, though, establishes herself with a tough decision where she needs a couple of cubes, and the plan is to keep passing and like let Dongmin win, as I understood it, which would secure an alliance, but she wouldn't win the game.
Yeah, her plan was kind of unclear to a degree. I mean, there was definitely the, like, she picked the 24 and the 27, and she's like, okay, I need several cubes to connect this, which is a risky play. If any of them are the ones that have been removed, I'm screwed. And from there, she makes like choices, sort of like, feels like through the flow of the game, she's trying to get a feel on who's going to win and get on their good side, I guess, is sort of the vibe I get.
It's a very wishy-washy strategy.
I can't argue with that.
Call it that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she addresses that in the end of the episode where she's like, sometimes I try to do a, like, she can play alliance as well, but then death matches, that sort of like kind and empathetic nature just doesn't help very much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And can cause issues. But then that whole alliance breaks apart because the minus 20 gets pulled. Kyung-hoon told everybody that the hidden cube was minus 20. It was not. And he's like, oh yeah, I did it to help Dongmin. It's also not the number that he says it is the second time, as we learn at the end. But yeah, the Kyung-ran stuff, I was honestly a bit confused on. But it seemed like it was going to be basically one of them losing the game, and they were trying to prevent each other from losing, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's... Gosh, we have things to talk about there. Mm-hmm. I guess we can kind of go out of chronological order, because ultimately, so Kyung-hoon wins the bidding to see the hidden cube, right?
Yep.
And so he sees it, and he lies about what it is. The ultimate result is that it is 26. It is one of the ones that Kyung-ran needs.
Mm-hmm.
It is his choice whether to add it to the pool or not. And basically in that moment, he has decided that Kyung-ran is going to the death match. He has just
chosen
that. And I don't know how I feel about that, because it's, I don't know, you know, I'm sure there's lots that happens on the show that we don't get to see,
mm-hmm.
but I've never seen any indication that he's had like bad interactions with Kyung-ran or any necessarily reason to want or send her home.
Yeah.
my teammates generally get along. We do a lot of like team bonding activities, you know, like slumber parties, pasta party, play under the little parachute thing.
Oh, I love the little parachute.
But I think it yeah, it's so fun. I think it might have been Dong Min.
You think Dong Min was, they talked and Dong Min was like, send her home?
I mean, we know last episode, Dong Min was pretty, he was gunning for Kyung Ron to be in the death match last episode.
That's true.
And so, I mean, because I think he knows she's a strong competitor, very strong competitor. And I think it goes along with, like, we didn't get to see a lot of deliberation. When Kyung Hoon got that, the hidden cube, and was like, oh, I think I have to talk to Dong Min now. Like, they showed us 5 seconds of that where he's like, oh, yeah, so it's not minus 20. It's, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's Kyung Ron's number. And then they just cut away. There could have been something in there where it's like, okay, let's select her and then see what happens. I don't know. Maybe Dong Min wasn't afraid of going to the death match either. You know, they're just going to trade off going to the death match and
basically
knocking people off.
Mm-hmm.
Not the worst strategy. It's kind of a long term play, but, you know.
Yeah. But that's what I think Kyung Hoon's going for, and I bet Dong Min might they might have a some sort of brotherhood together there, till the end.
Sort of a Brotherhood of Steel, a sort of a Fallout New Vegas.
I thought you were going to say exactly Brotherhood of like Steel, S T E A L. Steal the win.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Thank you.
That's pretty good.
Thank you.
Pretty good.
Well, that's I also spelled Vegas, V A no
G A Y S
G. The room code is...
Kyung-hoon does attempt to screw over the Junsik alliance and attempt a joint win, I guess. Who is he joint winning with? Who is he trying to joint win with?
Junsik was the... It was going to be Kyung-hoon, Junsik.
Oh,
the joint
and then
win,
he says, but... like, I'm actually going to be with Dong-min or help him out. And all this wraps up, and it turns out Dong-min and Kyung-ron sent to the deathmatch, tragically. A match made in heaven? If only it wasn't the death match. If it was like them pairing up to like fight supervillains or run a company or be in like an assassin team, I would be so into it. But one of these people is going to go home tonight. And
you want to see them as the stars in a remake of Jack and Jill.
Yes. Or like Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Oh, that would actually
I was actually thinking of. Yeah, yeah. My bad.
Jack and Jill!
I don't know what the fuck Jack and Jill
Jack
is.
Jack and Jill is an Adam Sandler movie. That's where Dunkachino comes from.
Oh shit!
That's what that's from.
I think I know what.
Oh no,
Alan, you have the power.
It's not Dongman anymore. Well, it's Dong.
It's Dunkachino.
Donk. New Dong City. Anyways, it's the two of them. They're going to the death match. Let's hope that it's a good one. Before we talk about the death match, we got to talk about some homework, folks.
Mm-hmm.
We do. We watched Strange Days, per my recommendation, for the homework this week. It's a movie directed by Kathryn Bigelow from 1995. It's got Ralph Fiennes. It's got Angela Bassett. It's got Juliette Lewis. A former cop turned street hustler accidentally uncovers a conspiracy in Los Angeles in the far-flung future of 1999. What did we think of this movie? I had never seen it before.
I also had never seen it before.
Why did you recommend it? What was the choice? What was the thought process?
I love cyberpunk. I love cyberpunk. Well, I love cyberpunk with caveats. I like science fiction. I like this era of filmmaking. I've never seen a Kathryn Bigelow film. I've heard this one is particularly great. I didn't actually know that Angela Bassett's in it, but I love her, and I think she's an incredible actress. And yeah, this has just been recommended enough times as this sort of like, yo, no one talks about this movie. It's really good, but also it's really hard to find. As I mentioned in like the setup for the homework, we literally had to torrent this. Like, you cannot buy this legally in the United States at the moment unless you want to get a German language coded Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
It almost
ended Bigelow's career because it was such a bomb.
Yes, wow. And I think I understand why it's hard to stream right now. Partly for content. I'm sure it's also like it's mostly like licensing and stuff, but content wise, this is like one of the more severe films that I've seen in a while, which I think was my first like hesitation with it, because it opens and it's like, oh man, it's a cool it's like sci-fi and it's kind of corny in that 90s way, and it's got the music and it's like, you know, they're addressing like police brutality, like we're doing the thing, it's confident and all that stuff. But the core conceit is that there's all these characters who can like put these little USB tapes or whatever into their head
brain.
Head setup the thing is called a squid, and they can, like, it's like VR, except you can feel the feelings. Naturally.
Yeah, you're recording your own lived experience, and other people can relive it.
Yes, and Ray Fiennes' character is a former cop who got in trouble, and now he just makes tapes and sells tapes to people. So he's got his former cop friends and his various friends in the criminal underworld that find out that, spoilers, the cops are evil. Did you know?
That's...
So, we'll get there. The movie goes a lot of places. It's like 2.5 hours long. I honestly think it's a little excessively long. 2 hours 25, I guess. But the beginning of the movie with all the setup is useful so that when things break down, you still feel that sense of surprise. Because at the end of the day, this is also just a noir thriller, right? And one of the characters that you think is a friend betrays everybody, and it turns out, oh man, he's actually one of the bad. He's the bad guy all along.
Who's the bad rat man? I really liked it.
Yeah.
I didn't even, like, it was a super long movie, but I didn't really mind. And I don't know what part you could cut. You could maybe cut the part where they go to Angela Bassett's, like, family's house, I guess.
But I like that
scene.
And, like,
make that a lot shorter. Yeah, right? I don't know what I would cut. I think the world building was really good.
I think you could shave parts down. I mean, I'm not here to try and edit the movie down, but, like, if you told me I had to do it, I could come up with stuff.
Yeah.
But I guess so. Here's one thing, right? This is kind of a throwaway before we get into the real conversation. How come Cyberpunk is so obsessed with LA and then doesn't ever actually make it look like fucking LA?
The only thing that was
I live in LA. It's never fucking, like, fucking, you got your Cyberpunk 2077 and it's Night City, which is modern LA, which is probably the least I've ever seen a city look like Los Angeles. How come they always pick the city and they never try and make it look like this?
This was filmed
it's
in
a
LA,
big city.
By the way. This was totally filmed in LA, in downtown LA, West Hollywood.
I believe you, but their choice of, like, I don't know, like, I don't know if it's the lighting or the cinema, like, that's part of it, right? Is, I guess it's one of the things that goes part and parcel with making a noir film is there's so much stuff happening at night.
Yeah.
But, like, that's not the Southern California aesthetic.
Yeah.
No.
It's a sun-washed hellhole. I like LA. LA's good. But it's weird to me, just as a one-off, that Cyberpunk so consistently, like, you don't get a lot of Cyberpunk about New York or Chicago. You get it about LA and then it never feels like LA. You get some. I'm not saying you don't get any, but LA is the city that they pick for Cyberpunk and then it never really feels like LA to me.
It's definitely the most popular city for Cyberpunk to take place in. I mean, I think it's the easy reason why it's always LA is that LA, it has this association with, like, corruption and police and high technology and, like, Silicon Valley.
New York's got that, and
yeah,
like, as historically, especially, like,
it's Hollywood. The answer then is that it's Hollywood.
I think actually the answer is that it's about the it's kind of. I'm not going to say, it's playing on tensions of, like, creeping racial tension.
Yeah.
Right. LA is a city that has had a lot of like history of, like, racial trouble, and, you know, obviously you could say, like, NYPD and stuff, but, like, LA is an area where it's like, you know, like the Latino community is just, like, going up and up and up,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, if you want to show a city that has, like, oh god, in 20 years you're not going to recognize this city, LA is a logical pick. Even though I think in LA in 20 years you're going to be like, oh yep, there's the mom and pop burger joint, I totally recognize this shit.
Pomona's best.
The one thing that's hilariously LA about this, and I have never been to LA, but I know this about it from people who live there, is how much of this movie is, like, getting places by car. And, like, yeah, there's
true.
A part early on where where Lenny takes a ride in Mace's car and she's doing another job. And he's like, can you just drop me off somewhere? Like, I don't want to take public transit. There's no infrastructure. Please just drive me there. I'm never going to get there in time. And, like, all of the so many scenes take place at night and in cars.
That's true. That's very LA.
You know? So yeah, I think they attempted to go for that realism, but also a lot of it is, like, in warehouses or in like just people's backyards or whatever. Like, the movie jumps around a lot. It also opens with, like, a really bonkers there's a lot of first person scenes. All of the squid scenes, the VR scenes, are in first person. Apparently those were super tricky to film. I don't know much about, like, how movies are made.
I was surprised to see those. Like, in,
I mean, they didn't have GoPros in 1999, so yeah, that would be hard.
They had to make a camera setup that somebody could hold by hand. They, like, invented it for this movie. Not like
it's
the very
different
first.
Than I think modern technology now.
Oh yeah,
it had a different feel for sure.
Yeah,
besides just being like shot on film and all.
Yeah, and that first one being and the way that those sequences play with your expectations of like who am I in this and what's their purpose? Because the very first one's like they're these two guys who like robbed a store, I think, and then are running away from the police. And the guy that you're in first person with gets shot and falls off a building. And Lenny takes the helmet off and he's like, why do you keep giving me the ones where the guy dies? Stop doing that. He's like, yeah, but it's interesting, isn't it? It's like, no, I don't want to be, I don't want to experience death. And I think the movie is a lot of it is about, you know, how can being able to experience other people's feelings and life experiences, can that create a sort of empathy or like how do people exploit that more often than not? Because it's mostly, that's the thing, if I have a criticism, is like it's mostly used for harm in this film or for like lechery. But there is talk, and this is one of my favorite things about the movie, of like, yeah, there are some experiences that I know other people wish they could have. Like Lenny talking to a business guy and being like, have you ever wanted to be a woman? And like that is clearly tinged with like a pervy intent. But also like that is totally how that would be used if people could do it. Is people would try changing their sex or gender or whatever.
I think it was even like it absolutely was all, you know, very like skeevy stuff. But the fact that they even had like mentions of the tapes, the squid tapes and stuff that weren't that at all. Like the one of Lenny's buddies in that club, like a double amputee.
Yeah.
He gave him a tape of like a guy running on the beach.
Yeah.
And
so
the
you
waves.
Could feel it. Yeah.
And they like spent 2 minutes on that. That's another scene that's like easily cuttable, but I would not want to cut. It was.
No, that's a really good scene.
I think.
Yeah.
So like they weren't like shoving a message in your face or anything. It's one of those good movies, you know, films, whatever. That's just, you know, spinning your brain cycles.
Yeah. It lets you fill in like what are things you would want tapes of? You know, it's not, the movie's not going to like go down the list of like, here's all the things that people want tapes of. It's about a guy who's selling it to pervy rich old men. So when he's like, yeah, you get to be an 18-year-old girl taking a shower, that's what they want. He's not saying that's a good thing, but he's like, oh, you can have it. We filmed it. And it just, yeah, once it actually gets to the plot about the murder of Jericho 1 by these two awful cops, one of them, Vincent D'Onofrio, and the other one, William Fichtner, two very well-known character actors, actually. I think Vincent D'Onofrio plays the Kingpin in the Daredevil Netflix show, which was weird to see Kingpin as a cop. But, he's murdered, and this is right before New Year's Eve on 1999, so people think the world is going to end. That's sort of the table setting that we get. And Lenny thinks he's trying to find out who initiated this, but it's like, oh, the record guy, the guy who owns like Jericho's contract, is corrupt and evil and also has control over Faith, Lenny's former wife, girlfriend. It's not clear. I think they might have just been dating. And he thinks that it's as simple, but like any good noir case, it goes way more up the ladder, not more systematic. And then it turns out that it's actually it's sort of a cover up for these two cops who want to get like revenge. And it's hella, they're all hella racist. Big surprise, the cops are racist. Did you get it? Like, maybe that was way more revolutionary in the 90s also.
Well, but the thing is, I mean, those two cops are portrayed as hella racist, and there is portrayed as being a larger like problem with, you know, like cops and discriminatory behavior. But like the other cops that show up are like all basically treated like the good ones.
I don't agree. I disagree.
We've talked about this movie so much because we had so many thoughts. But
I mean, like, okay, first of all, there's Palmer Strickland, who's the police deputy police commissioner, who is like, oh, listen, he could never be corrupt. He's so on the straight and narrow. You're going to give him illegal stuff and tell him it's evidence. And he's going to be like, damn, I should arrest you, but I need to see this evidence. And like do the right thing, and all the cops are like, the cops shoot the other cops when push comes to shove because they're the bad ones and these ones are the good ones. I don't know. I feel like it is a product of its time. It's just watching it in 2021 when we are dealing with so much like public discussion and trouble with the like racist and hateful nature of the police. It feels a little naive.
No, I totally get that. And I think where I didn't think that Strickland ends up being a good guy is like, yes, Lenny, who is definitely portraying this movie as like very ignorant. Like He basically is a broken guy who really just wants his girlfriend back, doesn't understand that he's uncovering a conspiracy, and it's Angela Bassett's character who is like, no, this is way bigger than you're making it out to be. You can't just give this thing to the cops. And when she finally caves and is like, okay, fine, I'll give it to him, it's literally like 5 minutes later in the New Year's Eve scene where she's like, yep, couldn't trust him because the police, she gets beat up at the New Year's Eve meeting. Also, the two cops, as soon as they're like, okay, like, this is the part that I think is the most harsh indictment of police, is they're like, okay, I guess we're just going to arrest them. And then they, excuse me, the bad guys, like, immediately break out of that and shoot, and everyone just shoots each other. And it's like, this system was never going to work. There was never a universe where you could take care of these two corrupt cops and it would be fair. They think there will be, but it clearly immediately shows itself like, oh, that was never going to work. They were just going to steal guns and break out or something.
Well, but that's also sort of compromised by it being this, you know, big budget, you know, like, noir action movie. These movies never end with the person just getting arrested. They always have to get shot.
Someone has
they
to
always
die.
Have to close the book. So
I just don't think that the film ever is like, and this is one of the good cops. That's the one thing.
I feel like maybe I'm overselling it a little bit on that front, but I do think the show kind of is like the ultimate reveal of like, oh, you thought there was this big conspiracy, and like there is, but it's not the one you thought. The cops weren't conspiring to kill Jericho One, it's just these two assholes. Mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. does like I feel like the way this goes in the real world is that those two like the other cops find out that they killed Jericho One and they're like, don't worry, we'll cover this up.
You think that's how it would go in real life?
Yes.
I mean, yeah, likely. If there wasn't, if you didn't have a Lenny looking into it, then
I think, but the thing that, the reason I didn't have any strong take at all, really, at the end, was that it wasn't anything clean at the end. Like, the end was very messy.
That's noir, mm-hmm. baby.
Like, that's probably it, too. But, like, they had a, like, the final setup, the final, like, set piece is... the supposed big bad guy has Lenny's former girlfriend captured, basically.
Yeah.
And so he's gonna go in with this tape he has that's evidence of the cops executing the rapper who was the leader of like the Black Resistance in LA.
Yeah.
He's gonna trade that over for his former girlfriend. And then Angela Bassett's character's like, fuck no, you're not. Do you know what that tape could do? And obviously it's a stupid setup, right? Because we're in a movie and we have to do this. And then he's like, oh, okay, fuck it anyways at the end. He's like, okay, you can have the tape. You should go give it to this police commissioner guy. But then he ends up rejecting that girlfriend too, realizing that she's a piece of shit, uncovering the whole thing behind the mystery that his friend was a bad guy. And then the whole scene with the two cops, the bad like cops at the end who executed Jericho... was so long and messy.
This is where you cut.
Maybe
this
it's
is where
just
you cut
it was
the
noir,
movie.
But I don't know if you could though.
I think like, that there's like one plot twist too many in this film.
That's absolutely true. But I think it would give a more strong impression of like a message or something if you cut the weird messiness of the end. Because like it's the two cops chasing Angela Bassett.
Mm-hmm.
They catch her, but she beats him up because she's like a badass in this movie. It's great.
Love her. Amazing. Oh,
great
fight
scenes. Really good fight scenes.
She's honestly, Angela Bassett is absolutely the star of this movie. She's
for sure. I agree. She carries it through the end. And then she handcuffs them up and she's like, oh, good. And then like a SWAT team arrives and they capture her. And it's like, oh, and then they're going to be buddy buddies with their cop friends. And so they start letting them out of the handcuffs. And she's like, no,
but then there's
a
riot.
Her. Yeah, but then they riot on the SWAT team and the cops, and there's a huge riot.
That seems weird.
And the two cop, yeah. It's such a mess, but I don't think, if you cut it, I think it changes how the end feels.
I think you keep a lot of it, but I do think specifically the part where it's like, okay, this turns into a riot, and then Palmer Strickland shows up and says, stop rioting, and everyone does. That doesn't work.
Yeah, the fact that we have to watch, and this is the part that's uncomfortable for me in our modern times, is we have to watch Angela Bassett get like brutally assaulted by police for like a good 30 seconds before a civilian is like, oh wait, this is actually bad. I've decided I will jump on a cop's back. Like a child says that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that is the one where it becomes like triumphant and it's trying to be like, you know, community can save us and all that stuff. But again, if you could cut something from this whole back end and just really focus on that commentary, I don't need the character of Max. I don't need his friend betraying him and secretly wanting to have sex with Juliette Lewis or whatever. I thought that was completely extraneous. It's
like almost two movies mashed together. Like it's 2 3-quarters of a movie mashed together or something.
Well, and all the like, so.
Which sounds harsher than it is. Like I think it works. It's
part
messy
of the
in a way
thing,
that's not bad.
Part of the thing about this movie, right, that we've kind of, I think we've had trouble finding the right language for, is I don't think it's, like, we talked about this, it's not fair to call this movie horny, right?
Yeah.
I think it is very interested, you might even say obsessed, with sexuality and abuse. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's glorifying it, but it is just fascinated in a way that I think
it
is too much.
Very R-rated in a way that they, like a very 80s to 90s R-rated movie.
It shows more of it than I want it to, honestly. There were parts where I was the crucial, I know it's a crucial sexual assault scene where it's Iris being raped, but like, I didn't need to see as much of that as they showed. That was the part where I paused and picked it up later because I was like, I'm uncomfortable as hell.
Yeah, I don't think they needed to go that far. And there's some other stuff like that, but like also, you know, I wanted to say like, it's just Max, but like, there's also the scene with Max. Like, it's one of the, at the time, we don't know it's Max, but there's the Max, like, squid recording of him going into Lenny's house while Lenny's unconscious, and that's really fucking good.
Yeah, it is. It's fucking scary.
Yeah, it's really fucked in a way that I think is really effective, but, like, I don't know, I think this movie could have done with a little less show.
Yeah,
like they could have implied more than they demonstrated, and I would have been happier for it.
Because the action scenes are so good, like all, and I think the VR scenes or the squid scenes are great. It's just that they show a lot, and they want to make you uncomfortable. You know, like multiple people put on the helmet and watch that the Iris scene, and Lenny's like, "You have to see this. You have to. If you're gonna be on my side, you have to understand why this is bad." But it's like, no, I get it. Me, the viewer, I understand why that's bad.
Yeah, I don't have to be convinced that rape and murder is a bad thing, actually.
I
think people should watch it.
I do, too. It's a very
dark
film. I think
more people should watch it.
If
you enjoy that type of thing.
Yes.
It's a good one of those.
Eh, you know, that's fine.
It's, you know, it's going for something. I think it swings a lot harder than a lot of films of the time did, and even films of today. It's a very ambitious film, but be aware that there's some really heavy stuff in there, and it doesn't end cleanly at all.
What do you mean? They're in love now.
Oh, yay. I was so annoyed.
And it's the millennium.
And it's the millennium. New millennium, baby. Y2K, let's
Y2K, go. Y2K, baby. Yeah. Woo! Hell yeah.
I love that this is a movie from 1995, about 1999. That's so good. So juicy. But yeah, Strange Days. I'm glad we watched it. I'm going to give it. No, likewise. I don't. I always say I'm going to score it. I'm not going to score it. Come on. It's not my job here. My job is to tell you guys about the death match for this episode of
Can
The
Can I
Genius.
Get a 2-minute break?
Yes.
You got to go put the chickens in.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
Stark. Hold on.
That's an easy cut for you, Six.
Yeah, but I won't do that.
Oh, you want to talk?
Yeah, let's just talk.
Okay. Yeah, we were talking about Star Wars before this, and that was pretty cool.
Did you know that there was a version of this? They were going to have...
Oh, yeah.
Fucking the what's his name from U2?
Bono?
Yeah, Bono was gonna be in this movie.
As whomst?
As Philo, as the music exec.
Oh sure. I didn't recognize that guy. I liked his like grossness, but Michael Wincott is the actor's name.
Yeah.
I don't know.
More like Lou's Cott.
Oh.
Fucking Canadians.
Oh, he's in the he's in the Basquiat movie. I need to see that actually. Anyways.
He's also in Ghost in the Shell.
Oh no. Every time I'm like on, you know, IMDb, I accidentally hit somebody who was in the Ghost in the Shell movie. I remember that it exists, and I get sad all over again.
Yep, it's a bummer.
Is it passé in 1995 to name your movie after a song by The Doors?
I mean, yes, but it's fine.
Yeah, it's corny, and they do use it in the movie. They didn't like just say that and never use the song. It's in one of the clubs. Yeah. Apparently, one of the rave sequences was a real rave. like they advertised it around LA and were like, there's gonna be a big rave, and like a bunch of famous performers were there, and that's also the scene that they filmed the a bunch of stuff in. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, good for them.
Yeah. Here you go. The single oh, go ahead.
I also think it's really funny that they're talking about, like, I'm just reading more, you know, bits and pieces about the production, and James Cameron, who helped write it, one of the writers on this, talking about how they sort of ended up with Lenny being a lot sexier than they intended to, which I did not get at all.
No. I get that he's supposed to be schlubby. I know it's weird seeing Ralph Fiennes being like, that's Voldemort, but no, he's still a dork. He's still a huge dork. His name's Lenny.
Yeah. Yeah, he is not sexy. That's no, not correct.
James Cameron, Catherine Bigelow's ex-husband, I believe. They were married at the time of this movie.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, good for them.
Good for the straights, I guess. List of actors that were considered for the part of Lenny. Are you ready?
Sure.
Arnold Schwarzenegger. Oh.
Of course.
These are all so bad. Arnold Schwarzenegger, Denzel Washington, Michael Keaton.
What? What?
Tom Cruise, Jeff Bridges. I feel like you're getting there. Mel Gibson, no. Bruce Willis, no. Andy Garcia, kind of. Nicolas Cage. Patrick Swayze, John Travolta, Sean Penn, Bill Paxton, Dennis Quaid, and Kurt Russell were all considered for the part of Lenny Nero.
That's a fucking journey right there.
None of those fit. How did you pick so many people that don't match? He's supposed to be a dork. He's a huge dork.
I mean, the movie could have been different. You know, you rewrite for roles. That's true. Imagining this movie with Schwarzenegger as the star is just a terrible movie.
Oh, my favorite scene, probably my favorite action scene, by the way, was welcome back, Nick. Just the when they're fighting the police, they like find the two bad cops, and I'm sorry, I shouldn't keep saying bad cops. They find the two worst cops.
I know. I tried not to say it, but yeah.
Yes. And they get in a fight, and then they get in their car, and they get trapped in the car, and they light the car on fire with gas. And then they're like, well, how are we going to get out? We're going to die. Like, they sit in a burning car for, like, 15 seconds. And then Angela Bassett's like, and then she just floors in to go into the ocean, and I have to kick the doors open. It's kind of sick. It's just a well, like, directed action scene. I don't know.
I also like how bad the cops are at it. Right, yeah. Where they just sort of had that moment of like, I guess we won. Let's go.
Let's go home now. Doesn't even work out.
Big thunderstorm here. Very rain.
That's exciting.
Very very lightning.
Very big lightning. Well, Nick, now that you're back, do you want to talk about the death match?
No.
Me neither.
I don't want to talk about the death match.
Well, so here's the thing, right?
But do you know what I do want to do?
What's that?
Jesus, as I'm being assaulted by thunder, it's time for the dance break! Are you ready?
Why does anyone listen to this?
I don't know. I mean, I guess I haven't checked in a while. I can't confirm that anyone does.
Oh, he's about to say Wipeout again. It's coming up to the chorus.
Here comes the classic chorus. Go.
Are you ready? Okay. Bow.
So our death match for this episode was
so sad.
Gil Hop.
My favorite, finally. So have you heard of the game Set? It's a game of cards and colors. This Set is this game, exactly. There's no difference. This is just what it's called in Korean. It's called Gil Hop. In English, it's called Set. My friends used to play this a lot in high school. They taught me how to play it. I just checked in March of 2020, the last time I saw humans in person, or friends in person at least, was when my friends were like, you should learn how to play Set. It's really fun. And it's exactly this. There are a bunch of shapes on a board, and they have background colors, and the shape has a color, and the shape itself, and you want to get three that don't have either all the same or all different one of those three features. If there is one left on the board, then it's Hop, and if there's none left on the board that haven't already said, then it's a Gyul. It's a reflex game here on the Genius. So what?
Yeah, they have like 10 seconds each to go back and forth, taking turns. It's very fast paced.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of hard to film because it just goes so quickly. This goes disastrously. Tell me what happens, Nick.
God.
Kyungran gets owned.
She has astigmatism. She can't see the gray backgrounds. It's like 2 to 3 for a while, and then 3 to 4, and
it
then
starts out really, really tense. Like, they do split screens of Dongmin. Well, like, Kyungran chose Dongmin for the death match. It's like, you know what? If I'm gonna go out with anybody, be Dongmin.
Mm-hmm. If I'm gonna go on a date with anybody, yep, go out.
Be Dongmin. And like, the looks on their faces are the most focused, the most under pressure I've seen in the show so far. Like, Dongmin, wise eyes absolutely peeled. Like, his eyes are watering. He's like crying from concentrating so hard. And Kyungran, basically similar, but quickly just flubs and never really gets any points. And then she says, you know, oh, I can't see the board really. Because they're like 20 feet away from this projection of the board.
Yeah.
And one of the backgrounds is white and one of them is gray. So
I get it. I also have really bad eyesight. If I had to do this without my glasses or with contacts, I would be squinting the whole time. But come on. Like, I say this so often, but if you still thought that this show was somehow scripted to be the most interesting game possible, sometimes one person just wins like 10 to 1. It just happens.
Yeah. Dongmin was fierce. Like, this was, like, not King Dongmin, not, like, failing Dongmin. It was just he focused as hard as possible, completely went inside himself, and just got almost everything right. He did basically everything that he could do right.
Yeah, it was pretty one-sided.
Yeah.
He describes what is actually like the ideal strategy for Set or for Yulhop, which is check for the number of each thing, each different background, and then if there's something with two, then that's not the one. Like, just basically process of elimination, long story short. That strategy can get you pretty quick. Eventually it becomes a reflex game and a focus game, and he just has the focus. Kyungran says that she felt pressured. She loses, if this wasn't clear. She felt pressured being the only woman left on the show to be the best, which is a valid concern. She felt like she was really good at alliances but wasn't able to compete when it comes to reflexes. Unfortunately, the genius requires you to have at least those two skills if you're going to end up in the deathmatch.
Yep.
It's not how we wanted to see Kyungran go.
Nope, not at all. Now it's a boy. We're back to the boys' club. Like, this happens every season. And every time I'm like, oh, I'm bummed out now, but the rest of the show, it's the dude's corner.
I mean, we're going down to one-person teams anyways, but...
Yeah, for our sakes.
Still sad.
Well, I will say this. There's a final twist, which is that Kyunghoon's cube all along was minus 26. And then someone's like, yeah, I should have just betrayed him.
Yeah.
And Dongmin says, I guess I'm all on my own now. I must work alone. But before you think that it really is the dude's corner, if you did you both watch the preview for next episode?
No.
Okay.
I watched a little.
Yeah.
I tried to stop because it seemed like it was cool, and so I wanted to be surprised.
You should be excited. Next week's going to be really fun.
Ooh.
Yeah, I think I know what you're referring to. Uh-huh, I'll put it that way.
It's going to be sick. Cool. Well, I think that's what we got.
Yeah, it's time for fantasy genius scores and points and things.
Huzzah.
Nicholas.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what it is, but Alan owes you something for not calling you the points leader.
Yeah.
You also owe yourself something. We fucked this up again.
Yeah, I didn't.
Well, yeah, I thought about that. I couldn't remember if I was supposed to praise myself.
I literally wrote it in huge font on the top of my document, and I still didn't. I wrote praise myself, and I said, don't say the cursed phrase. Can I now say the phrase?
I'm Alan?
Yeah. Can I say that now?
Oh, wait. Were you not saying that because of the Garnet Wager?
Yeah. Didn't we say one of the things was like, you have to not say it or something for...
You made your own decision. That was not a thing that was sent upon you.
I've literally, in my real personal life, been prevent not saying it just to keep the discipline. Like, my coworker started making a joke about it, being like, why don't you say that anymore? Didn't you used to say that all the time? Get the fuck out of here. I'm Alan.
It's very... Woo! Alan's back.
I'm Alan.
How are the points doing?
So, you're in. You got last this episode. You're still first overall, Nicholas. You got 39 this episode. It brings you to 237 total. Mm-hmm. I was next up. I got 68 points this episode. That brings me to 63 total.
You're in the green. You're in the black.
I am finally in the green.
Welcome to the green.
Yes. And of course, that means that Alan, you're a winner this episode with 84 points on this episode. You're still at 202 total. You're still behind Nicholas.
Slightly.
You also won the Gregnet because of Dongman.
Yeah.
And Dongman.
I got plans for that Gregnet. I got plans.
Also, the Garnet Cager is up to 37 Garnets, which is...
That's a lot of Garn.
It's not a small quantity. I probably fucked up some math at some point. That's one thing that's worth saying. I said it to them, right? Mm-hmm. This episode was absolute hell for tracking fantasy points. And you know what? I'm just going to say they're probably wrong and I don't fucking care.
Hell yeah.
Yep. That's used practice. The one coach's challenge I had just to get a Gregnet, which, you know, so that I had three Gregnets because it paid off. But
right, right.
Yeah, it's not allowed anymore.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, sometimes you make mistakes and I don't care about mistakes. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
They're not real.
Six step more 2021.
Oh, it's 2021, huh?
Uh-huh. All day.
Yeah.
You're just gonna, it really just gonna drop that
think,
on me.
You know?
Yeah, damn. So that means it's your turn to assign homework for us, Alan.
I came up with it right now.
Okay.
You guys love competition? You love
No.
Do you like video games?
Yeah.
Sure.
You guys have computers? I know at least one of you owns this game on Steam. I'm gonna get it for the other one.
No computers.
Oh.
Not can big on those.
Can we play Unreal Tournament, please? Can we play UT 2004 specifically?
I would love to play UT 2004. UT 2004 is great. The only thing I will warn you is that last time I tried to play UT 2004 with a friend, it was kind of a pain in the ass.
I think we just need to get Hamachi. We might be fine. If it's a pain in the ass, I'll adjust the homework. But I would like to attempt to play UT 2004.
It's like a shooty, quakey type thing. Like I played those a long time ago. Okay.
Yes. I want to go on Facing Worlds and shoot somebody with a railgun.
Sure.
Love it.
I don't think
that
there's a railgun in that game, but you know.
Rip.
Well, don't let your dreams.
We'll get a mod. We'll get a mod.
I think you can use the lightning gun.
Mm. Oh. When Kiryu drinks a soda in Yakuza. Oh.
I hate that I completely.
You can
get
hear
that.
It exactly, right?
I can.
Nerds.
Oh, boy. Oh.
You're the one who fucking sings the stupid song at the... Wait, before you do that. Plug zone.
Oh, I was
six.
Moving my mouse.
Six, go first, please.
Okay, so you can find me on Twitter at SixDetmar, SIXDETTMAR. You can find my work at ScanlineMedia.com or Patreon.com/ScanlineMedia. That's me.
I'm Alan.
Wow.
Yay, I can say it again. Yay. Chats a television podcast. Chats colon a television podcast. CHATZ.
Thank you.
TV show podcast. We're going to be starting our season of miniseries very soon. We are watching Vanity Fair, Angels in America, and 1994's The Stand. So miniseries time, baby. We got some fun stuff planned on the TV show discussion podcast. Check out Chats CHATZ wherever you listen to podcasts. That's what I got. Nick, hit it.
And last, and definitely least, Nicholas.
Last but not yeast.
We have so much dumb nonsense planned for the post pod.
I've
the way.
Been a fool, and you've been.
No, do not. Do not.
My God, it's been so long.
Baka mitai, kodomo nanone.
It's a karaoke track. Jeez.
Yume o. Oh,
take it, suite. It's so hard with lack
of Uso ga. Hetana kuse ni warenai egao miseta. Here it comes.
I love a garnet, roku ni iwanai.
By the way, we forgot to say it on the episode, but we did in fact redraft. We are all down to one player now. So Alan has picked Dongmin, Nick has picked Kyunghoon, and I'm going with Jin Seok because I guess I just feel like losing. Peace.
Ahem. Good evening, friends. The Ruby Raiders here bringing you another stunning segment of... We're back in recording the draft of this week's episode. I noticed that the Bandage Man's recording studio felt a bit chillier than normal. And as I peered outside, I tried to close a window, and to my surprise, it was all red. Red, as far as the eye can see, listener. Apparently nobody told me that we went to Mars. Listeners, do me a favor. Put yourself in my shoes for a moment. You're dressed in your finest ruby red attire. You're ready to rate the songs of the Korean game show The Genius as if they are K-pop. And then you wake up and you're on Mars. Nothing ever happens on Mars. It's all the same. There's no life. There's no K-pop. Nothing. There's no South Korea on Mars, listener. It's so cold and, quite honestly, pretty scary. And if the Bandage Man and his silly friends hadn't eventually gotten us back home, I don't know what I would have done, to be honest with you. So it was an eye-opening experience, to say the very least. So, I guess we're back. Let's move forward, yeah? We'll keep our heads held high, and we're gonna review some tunes. If you listen to the episode, you know that Kyungran left this week, set to Sam Smith's Stay With Me, which to me pales in comparison to songs like Stay by Blackpink, which is playing beneath me at the moment. Even as Stay With Me attempts to emulate the beautiful emotional triumph of a song like Gone by Rosé, one of my recent favorites. That song definitely kept me, I guess sane isn't the word. Stable? Present? It certainly kept me grounded as we sailed through space, I'll say that. Music does have that sort of power. And as we all know, all the best music is K-pop, right? That's it, right? That's all we need is just K-pop, right? That's the best. It's all we need, guys. What am I doing? What the fuck am I even doing? What is this bit I'm even doing? Is this even me? Is this even what I care about? What do I care about? We'll talk next week. Thank you. This has been the Ruby Raider, signing out.
Well, Opportunity, I don't know what I expected, but it wasn't this.
You can call me Oppie. We're friends now. And yeah, isn't it cool?
Inspiring, even. How did you build all this?
Well, there's lots of resources here on Mars, no titans of industry using it up like on Earth. Other than that, it's just a matter of hard work, and I'm a hard worker.
And why did you build it all?
I don't know. I'm a robot. A programming subroutine was hidden in my code? A bug? It just felt like what I should do. You can relate, right?
What?
Oh, I'm sorry. You seem okay on Mars without a spacesuit, so I just assumed you were...
A reasonable assumption. No, I'm not a robot, but in a way that's not too far off, I suppose. What are your plans for all of this?
I don't have one. I felt compelled to build them. That's about it. If you want them, you can do whatever you want with them. My programming doesn't seem to have an opinion on the matter.
So you're saying you built a massive fleet of unmanned, laser-equipped spacecraft, and you don't care what happens to them?
Nope. Honestly, I'm so bored these days. If you do anything with them, it'll be a relief.
I certainly have some ideas, Oppie. Perhaps it's time to put this invasion force you've built to use.